This year relates to Parshas Bahar, Shemitah. It's a Shemitah year as it is. I gave the shmooze on Thursday in Eretz Yisrael, and now it's, you know, for you guys, it's Bahar this coming Shabbos. And either way, the message I think is an extremely important one, which you could talk about really any day of the year, and I think it's extremely pertinent. I think Eitan, you heard this. I think it sounded like from your, yeah, you should feel free to. It's great to see you. But don't feel like you need to sit here for something you heard already.
Stand for a little.
Okay. So I wanted to try to just explain, one of the messages that comes out from the mitzvah of Shemitah. You know, commonly it's assumed that the mitzvah of Shemitah is a test of our emunah and bitachon in Hashem. You know, you have to believe in Hashem, trust in Hashem. You're not going to plant for an entire year. You're not going to harvest. There's not going to be any food. You're going to starve. Your kids are going to starve. Right, so the test of Shemitah is really one of trusting in Hashem, believing in Him, knowing that He's going to provide for you, even though you're not doing what basic hishtadlus would dictate. And if that's true, so that's one way of relating to what the Nisayon of Shemitah is. But when you look at the Psukim and in Parshas Bahar, last week's or this week's Parsha, so it doesn't sound like that. You know, it says that people are going to ask, what's going to be in the seventh year? What are we going to eat? How are we going to have food? And the Torah says, Hashem says, in the sixth year, I'm going to provide a tremendous abundance of food such that you'll have what to eat in the sixth year, seventh year, the eighth year, until the crops of the eighth year start being produced. You'll have plenty to eat from the produce of the sixth year. Fill up the silos and there won't be anything to be concerned about. So if that's true, so what is the Nisayon of Shemitah? What's the purpose of Shemitah? What's the test? If all of your needs are provided for, right? You have all the monies in the bank, what's the test? Why is it so difficult to keep Shemitah? So Rabbi Yochanan Zweig, who's a Rosh Yeshiva in Miami, said the following idea. I heard this on a tape recording of his from many years ago, and it's been a major force in the way that I've tried to look at the world since I heard it. So he said that you have someone who's a high-powered executive, extremely busy, you know, gets up early in the morning, running around, his phone's always beeping, he's texting, he's messaging, his meetings nonstop, barely has time to eat lunch, running around in the afternoon, you know, barely has any time to himself. People are always vying for his attention, collapses into bed at night, wakes up early the next morning and does it again. That's this person's life. He's making a lot of money. Right? Imagine someone comes over to him and says, you know, you're making $3 million a year. No problem. I'm going to give you $3 million right now. It's January 1st to give you $3 million. This year, you're not allowed to work. Right? So you're working, presumably you're working because you need to make money. You need parnasa. You want to be mefarnes your family. You want to have nice things. No problem. I'm giving you the $3 million right now. Stay home. Right? Don't work this year. So would the person take that deal? And so very possibly at the first glance, he would say, of course he would. Why not? This is great. You have all the money. You don't need to work hard. It's the best possible scenario. But when you think about it more, it's very possible the person wouldn't take the deal. Very possible he wouldn't. Because very often what ends up happening to us when we're working or producing is that we come to identify with what we're producing. That is to say, I'm no longer Hirschman, and Hirschman is inherently valuable, but I also teach or produce or I perform surgeries or I litigate cases, or, you know, run around, answer texts, but my entire self-identity becomes bound up with my production. So that if I'm not producing, it creates like this existential crisis whereby I no longer feel valuable. So let it be true that I'll have all the money, right? But I'm not working just because I need to support my family, right? My entire self-worth and self-esteem has become inextricably linked to all the things that I'm doing on a day-to-day basis, right? So you take a farmer whose entire self-definition is a product of all the hard work that he does and the harvest that he's able to generate and tell him, you know what? Don't worry about it. Sixth year, you're going to have everything you need. Just don't work in the seventh year. Stay home. Right? How easy will it be for him to do that, right? Does it generate some sort of a crisis with regard to what is he really worth if he's not producing anything? And is the test of Shemitah, Rabbi Zweig maintains, is not so much a test of emunah and bitachon, but is much more a test of the ability to define ourselves separate and apart from what we produce. You know, that is to say, in Avodas Hashem and Ruchnius, we should be able to get to a place where our self-definition is not a product of external things. external production, right? We relate to ourselves and the importance that we have much more as a product of just who we are. What are we doing spiritually? How are we growing? Who are we trying to become? What are our aspirations in a spiritual sense, which has absolutely nothing to do with what we're producing on a day-to-day basis? You know, to the extent that your self-definition, Shalom Aleichem Ariel, to the extent that your self-definition is bound up with what you're producing, even if all the money is in the bank, it becomes extremely difficult to stay home and not be producing anything. You know, ever since the chait of Adam HaRishon, you know, where it became the way of the world, you know, b'zeya sapecha toch alechem, that you're going to have to, by the toil, by the sweat of your brow, you're going to be able to eat bread. And without working hard, you're not going to have parnasa. So initially, right, that test was just that, yeah, you're going to have to work in order to be mefarnes yourself. But one of the biggest tests of working in order to be mefarnes yourself is, does that become an entire self-definition as a result? And I think, you know, growing up at least the way I grew up, I'll just speak for myself, that was definitely going on. That was a major part of what was going on everywhere around me, was people coming to define themselves in terms of what they're able to produce, what they're able to do, how much are they able to generate, how much money they're making, how prestigious their job is, what career they have, and people feeling like, you know, someone who fails to rise in the ranks of the corporate ladder or whatever profession they're in, and is not producing a lot, making a lot of money, having a prestigious career, so is viewed by others and sees himself even as sort of a loser, you know, a low yutzlach, someone who didn't succeed in life. And the fact that maybe you're succeeding in all the other areas, which we know deep down are much more important, that's actually inadequate. It doesn't make us feel good. It doesn't make us feel like we're worth anything. And as a result of that, in the Shemitah year, when, you know, you have everything you need, it's so hard to stop working, right? I come face to face with who I really am. You know, Rav Noach Weinberg Zatzal, when I was in the yeshiva years ago, he used to say how, he gave this mashal a few times, a mashal, a story, whatever. He used to say, he used to talk about how someone goes on a plane, you know, and they get on the plane and they're told that they can't use their phones. And the movies on the plane aren't on yet. So you sit down in your seat, there's a couple of magazines, you know, in front of you. Okay, you flip through the magazine sort of quickly. There's nothing really in there, fine. Then you're just sort of sitting there, and all of a sudden, like, you come to terms with, you, like, it's just you. And you have to, like, think about, what's my life about? What am I doing? There's nothing to distract you. Can't use your phone. The movies aren't on yet. The magazines are finished. And you have, Rosh Yeshiva used to speak about this all the time. People have zero connection with who they are. And so they're able to distract themselves, you know, 99% of the time they can distract themselves. Every once in a while, you're caught on that plane situation and you're stuck and there's nothing to do. Right? That's a product of someone not being able to define outside of what they're producing or distracting themselves so they don't feel the pain of sort of their emptiness. And then they find themselves in a situation where they can't run away from it. So the Hashem in Shemitah is saying, I'm basically giving you a compulsory paid vacation. You're not allowed to work this year. You can have all your needs provided for. Don't try to play the Parnassa card and explain that that's your issue. It's not true. There is no Parnassa issue. I'm going to force you to come to terms with, how do you define yourself? Who am I? Like, what do I stand for? What makes me feel good? What makes me worthwhile? And to the extent that your self-esteem is a product solely of those external things, you're going to be in big trouble during Shemitah. And Shemitah is sort of meant to facilitate a reframe of your self-definition. And I always tell the story, when the market crashed in 2008, my father's friend told us about someone that he knew who was like a big hedge fund guy, was making a lot of money. He used to go into the work and into the city very early in the morning and come back late at night. And he had lost his job because the market crashed. And for 6 months, he continued to get up early in the morning, go to the city, and come back late at night. Never told his wife that he lost his job. For 6 months, he didn't tell his wife that he lost his job. Like that is a product of a completely vacuous existence. Someone who feels like there's nothing to him, even vis-a-vis his wife. All he is a money-producing machine. And to the extent that he isn't producing money anymore, doesn't have his job, so how can he even face his wife? Right? It's a very shallow relationship, and a very shallow sense of self-esteem, when even vis-a-vis your wife, you're not able to tell her that you lost your job. Or people who end up, you know, when they get older and they retire, and now, right, their productivity is no longer measurable the same way it was for the last 60 years, 50, 40, whatever, 40, 50, whatever it's been. And now what? Right? People sometimes when they retire, they don't have what, they're not producing. So now what? How do I define? How do I feel good about myself? right? What is there to me, right? To the extent that a person hasn't cultivated a deeper sense of self that is not dependent on what they're producing. So retirement presents a tremendous challenge, because not only is it true that you're not working anymore, so you're playing golf, you're relaxing, you're chilling, whatever, but your entire self-definition is thrown into disarray and causes almost like this crisis of like, gosh, what did I do for the last 50 years? Who am I? Really, all I was all the surgeries that I did. There's nothing else to me. It's a scary realization to come to, that you haven't been able to develop anything more than that. You know, there's nothing inherent to me. It's all a matter of what I'm producing. Like, if you think about it, you know, the whole Ze'as Apecha Tocha Lechem, it's bidyeved. It wasn't supposed to be that way. That was a product of the chait. Right? We would have lived in a world where you didn't have to work for parnasa. So you wouldn't have been able to hide behind the fact that you're the head of the department in anesthesiology, or you made partner in a big law firm somewhere. You wouldn't have been able to hide behind that. You would have been stuck. Right? You wouldn't have been able to do it. Right? How are you, Joey? Nice to see you. Right? You wouldn't have been able to do that. And now, b'zeas apecha tocha lechem, so it was a klala, it was a curse. But that curse, not only is there a curse, but it presents a much greater challenge with regard to how we define ourselves and how we think about our worth as individuals. You know, I think when you try to relate to the danger that this concept presents, so it's twofold. You know, on the one hand, there's danger because to the extent that you define this way, if things are going very well in your parnasa, in your job, in whatever it is that you're doing, so then your incentive to try to work on other aspects of your avodah Hashem, is greatly diminished, because you know, you basically define yourself based on your productivity. Things are going well. What incentive do you have to turn inwards and try to make more meaningful changes in your avodah? And on the flip side, right, and this I think is even more significant sometimes, if things are not going well in your parnasa, right, you didn't get the promotion, you know, you got demoted, or something went wrong in your job, you lost your job, chas v'shalom. So now, what type of a crisis does that generate? In the event that you have a strong sense of self and your productivity is just a way to make parnasa, and you lose it, so it's terrible. I mean, I have to figure out another way to make parnasa. I have to feed my family. But it doesn't lead to a whole existential crisis about who I am. The fact that I don't have a job right now doesn't mean that I'm not a worthwhile human being, right? But to the extent that you haven't succeeded in divorcing those two things from one another, and your entire way of looking at yourself is bound up very, very tightly with what you do, so when things don't go well in your job, so it can create a whole mess that's really unwarranted, right? Just because your entire sense of self is relatively shallow. And now that you lost that ability to produce, and you don't have that job, and maybe you have to even tell people that you lost your job, you can't even hide it from other people. So like, there's nothing to you. There's nothing left. Again, it's a terrible position to be in. I'm not coming to say it's easy. And there's no question that there's an element of embarrassment at losing your job. I'm not saying. But to what extent does it cause like some sort of deep-rooted problem, and you start questioning your entire value as a human being? That's unwarranted. That shouldn't really happen. That shouldn't really happen. But it will happen to the extent that you're not able to connect to these ideas. And I guess, you know, the last point I would make over here in this regard is that this way of looking at things is also relevant with regard to the way we relate to other people, the way we relate to our kids, wife, friends. You know, to the extent that we focus for ourselves and we measure our value based on our productivity. What happens when you have a wife who's not so productive, or you have kids who are not so productive, they're not so good in school, or they have a hard time with, you know, activity X or activity Y, and you're like this super overachieving guy who, you know, always valued himself because of how successful he was and how hard he pushed and how much he succeeded. Then you have a wife and you have kids who are not succeeding. So how do you relate to them? Right? If you're not able to connect to the inherent value of a person, clap at yourself, kal v'chomer, clap at others, right? So if you're not able to instill this message for yourself and realize that you have value separate and apart from whatever it is that you're producing, so then your wife, your kids are in very big trouble, because you're not going to be able to value them either for what they are, right? If you can't do it for yourself, you're so unforgiving for yourself. You look at yourself solely through the eyes of productivity, how much money you're making, how prestigious your job is, whether you got the promotion, whether you're succeeding. So then what about when your kids are struggling in school? You know, what about when your wife is going through a hard time and she lost her job, or she's not doing such a good job in the house? Whatever it is, are you able to connect to the inherent value of a human being? If you can't do it vis-a-vis yourself, how will you do it vis-a-vis other people? And my wife was working with a lawyer who was a lawyer at one of the top firms in New York. And he's probably in his 50s, probably working as a lawyer for 30 years. And he once said to my wife a couple of years ago, he said that his entire career, he only lost one case. And he thinks about it every day, every day. Right. So that's like a guy who like his entire life is his work. Right. Like we can't be like that. We can't be like that. It's a very secular concept. Your entire life is your work. You entirely define yourself based on your work. And when I was, you know, working in law firms over summers and saw what was going on there in terms of the people who were working there as partners, as associates, the summer associates who I was part of that group, guys who were still in law school. And like the way that people's entire self-identity was bound up with which firm you worked in, you know, and how prestigious the firm was and how many hours a week you build. Like, that's not the way we want to be defining ourselves. We're going to take pride in how many hours a week you build. Like, that's your crowning achievement. It's such a secular idea. Like, the need for us to realize that our parnasa really is just a means to an end. Shemitah, proper observance of Shemitah demands that we're able to see that our parnasa, okay, it's hard for us to connect to farming, right? But farming was just the way to make parnasa back in the day, right? So Shemitah is trying to instill the message that farming, parnasa, making parnasa is just a means to an end. It doesn't define you as a person. If you have all the money in the silo, you have all the grain and you have all the grain there, what do I need to work for? This is great. Now I can focus on my learning, focus on my development as a person, right? I don't define myself based on productivity, right? That's something that we're all supposed to take out of the mitzvah Shemitah to try to think about in our schoolwork, you know, school, graduate school, careers, things like that, to make sure that we don't lose focus. We don't start defining ourselves in terms of the grades that we're getting, the money that we're making, you know, the surgeries that we're performing. Like, that's not who we are as people. That's a we need to make parnasa. We need to make sure that we can buy food for our families, buy clothing for our kids, send them to camps, send them to school. That's it, right? And of course, you should try to enjoy what you're doing and try to do something meaningful, but not that your entire definition of self is a product of that. Very, very important to stay away from that way of looking at the world. So this is Yesod to think about. And Shemitah is this idea, makes it a lot more contemporary. First of all, not just this idea of trusting in Hashem, relying on Hashem. Those are also very important messages. But this is something I think that's even more contemporary for us as we go into these years, these transformative years where we're going to school, going to graduate school, starting our careers, starting our lives, to be wary of the shift in self-definition that often accompanies this shift in focus on our time. You know, it's hard not to identify with what you're spending the lion's share of your time doing. If most of your time you're in school, most of your time you're working, it's hard not to come to identify with that as who I am, that's what I am. And Shemitah demands that we make that divide, that we don't come to view ourselves as what we do. Because if you do, even if the silos are full, you're going to feel a tremendous yetzer hara to work and to produce and to see the wheat and to see the barley and to see the apples and all the stuff that you do in other years. You're going to feel like, how could I not do that? Otherwise, what is there to me? That's the message. That's the message of Shemitah that I think is something that is very contemporary for all of us to try to live by. Let's take questions for like 5 minutes. If anyone has any questions, or we could just, you know, say goodbye. Everybody should have an amazing week. Everybody should come back to Eretz Yisrael to come visit. David Chai, you raised your hand. That's intense. Go for it, David Chai.
Yeah, Rabbi. So the concept that one shouldn't value themselves by their job, and they should realize that the important things that they're doing is their dedication and their avodah Hashem. What if someone almost has the opposite problem? Like, let's say somebody already views their job as a byproduct, as just a work. But they're actually more concerned with, you know, like maybe they're not doing because of how much time their job takes up, you know, especially in like the modern world, like they feel like they're not doing enough when it comes to learning or something.
What would Rebbe's recommendation for
that? Yeah. And like a Buddha session.
I mean, it requires a tremendous, you know, shift, certainly going from yeshiva to school or school to work, you know, You have to realize that to the extent that this is the job that you need to be doing right now, this is the training that you have, this is the job where you find yourself, and this is what you need to be doing right now. So if that takes up 40, 50, 60 hours of your week, so be it. And that's not called b'di'eved. And you know, you're going to try to fill as many hours as possible with davening and learning and doing mitzvos. But the hours that you're working, if that's what you need to be doing right now, it's not bittul Torah. There's nothing wrong with it. Can you try to find, right? I mean, when you're starting out, you have very little flexibility. So, right, all of you guys are in school or just starting out working. So you have very little flexibility. But as you move along in life, you're going to have decision, you know, junctures where you have the ability perhaps to work less, still make the same amount, or you could work a lot harder, you know, and make more money, but money that you don't really need. You know, at that point, you have decisions to make in terms of how you're going to be apportioning your time, which will largely relate to, you know, how you define yourself as an individual. And when just starting out and you have very little ability to sort of create your own destiny, you're being told what to do. And if you don't do it, fine, you don't have a job anymore. So you have no choice but to sort of toe the party line, do the best you can in the interim. It's a hard thing to do. But not to think of it as b'di'eved, because you need to make parnasa. So if it takes you 50, 60 hours a week to keep your job, you need to be doing that. And there's nothing wrong with it. And not to feel like there's something wrong with it. Like the Yetzer Hara loves to do this, to make you feel like you're a loser, and then you're in big trouble. You know, we have to realize like a lot of the things that we feel like make us inadequate and illegitimate. Wow, Yehuda, you look great. Right, a lot of things that make us feel inadequate and illegitimate are coming from places that are really not kosher. You know, the Yetzer Hara knows if he can get you to start feeling like a loser, feel bad about yourself, much easier to get you to do things that are wrong.